instead of just going after the church in general, what is he doing? Last week at the end, he was talking about that, that he's going after the individual Christians. So it is an all-out attack. At the end of the chapter, that is chapter 12, we see the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring. That's us. Okay? Now, so here in chapter 13, we pick up with, again, the beast and the beast and the image and the mark.
Is that what that says?
The beast, the image, and the mark. So what we want to do in this is look through and try to identify what is taking place here. What is John seeing in this part of his vision? Let me get somebody, if you would, to read from verse 1 through verse 4. All right, Annette, go ahead, please. John sees coming up out of the sea, and the dragon, again, who is representing who? Satan here. The dragon gives authority to this beast. And we have this description of the beast, and it's got these, how many heads? Okay. How many?
Seven
heads, okay. It's got crowns on each of them, horns, okay, and a blasphemous name. Okay? Let's see, I've got another. This one is a little bit clearer. Just kind of give you an idea, artist's rendition of what that beast could possibly look like. Okay? Now, this beast was given authority by the dragon. Okay? So this particular, this beast has authority that Satan has given him. And that authority has been, and we're going to see, is to wreak havoc in the world. And especially wreak havoc for those who are believers in Christ. Look at what he says here. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. All right, now, it says that one of its heads seemed as if it had been slain, but its fatal wound was healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed after this beast. Again, keep in mind two things. First of all, symbolism, right? Okay? The second is, keep in mind what the purpose of this vision is. It is to bring encouragement to Christians, especially facing persecution. Right now, it is not intended, or was not intended, to only give that encouragement to Christians of the first century, okay, or you know, when this was originally written. It's intended for all Christians of all ages. So therefore, we have to be really careful, as we've been saying all along, in our trying to interpret and understand and apply, what does this mean? What is this symbol, and so forth? As I told you before, you know, when it comes to the beast and all of these things, then most folks, most commentators want to put all of this on the Roman Empire. That's fine for those who lived in the first century, but it has absolutely no meaning and purpose for us today. Okay? So again, we have to be looking at it in terms of the symbolism. What does it represent? What would it have represented to them back then when it was first written? And what would it represent to people between them and us today? What would it represent to us? Okay. So we know who the dragon is. It's clearly identified. We saw that last week in chapter 12. What about this beast? What does this beast represent, do you suppose? World powers, governments. Okay? Notice that it has how many heads?
Seven,
and the crowns and so forth, right? Again, we looked at that last week when we were talking about the beast. Okay? That's what part of that represented is the authority and the powers of the world and so forth, that Satan himself has power and influence over those. What he has done here is he has given his power that he has to this beast, to specifically use world powers and governments to wreak havoc upon Christianity. Now, you know, which government? Okay? Why are there seven heads? What does that represent? Seven, symbolically, in the Bible, represents what? Completeness. Okay? Again, not intended to be a literal number, but a symbol of completeness. So it would then represent not just simply the government of Rome, which is only one, although we're talking more about that in just a second here, but governments throughout history that would be opposed to Christianity and would use their authority to try to stop Christianity and persecute Christians. Again, there are those, you can go and read, you know, what folks are saying about, you know, this, and some want to talk about, you know, this being the seven hills of Rome, you know, geographically, you know, Rome sits on seven hills and so forth, and so they say that's what it represents, so that's why. Forget that kind of stuff, all right? You're reading that, then close, stop reading it, because they're going to lead you astray, all right? People try to make it too literal. And I think it fits so much better to the main purpose and theme to understand it in the way we're saying that it represents governments of all time, however many there are. From the time this vision was seen until the time that Christ comes back again, that are opposed and will be and continue to oppose Christianity and try to stop it. And Satan is using the powers of the world to wreak his havoc upon the followers of Christ. Right? Any thoughts there? Comments? Questions? All right, now, in this vision, John sees that one of the seven heads, all right, had a fatal wound. But that wound had been healed. Any thoughts on anybody want to take a stab at? What do you suppose that represents? Possibly so. Possibly so. If you go back, and this is a Russism, okay? This is what I, you know, as I apply it, I think, you know, perhaps it makes sense here. That we saw Satan's attempt to stop Christianity at all kinds of times. We saw earlier where he tempted Jesus, and, you know, in chapter 12 we're looking at, you know, he tried to take the baby that the woman had and so forth. He wanted to stop Christianity before he got started. His goal, once it got to that point, was crucify the Christ, Okay, and that will stop Christianity. Okay, what did Satan use to bring about the crucifixion of Jesus? Pharisees and Sadducees, which represented who?
The leaders.
Okay, basically the Jewish government.
The church of the temple.
Okay, all right. But the Jews were not allowed, the scriptures even tell us that the Pharisees said they weren't allowed to crucify folks, so they got the Romans to do it for them.
Yeah.
Romans, you know, were just as opposed to Christianity, this because they saw it in early times as this new religion that, you know, was going to be causing problems. So they were more than willing to participate in trying to stop this thing before it got started. Right. And you go all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, right, when Jesus, when Satan had tempted Adam and Eve, and God comes down and he's pronouncing punishments. Okay, what was the punishment that he pronounced upon the serpent?
Crush
his head. Right. Okay. So for a time when Jesus was on the cross and he died and he was in the grave, then Satan had struck his heel. Right? But when Jesus, and this is the part that Satan didn't know, okay? Satan knows a lot of stuff, but he didn't know this. I'm convinced if he knew this, he wouldn't have had Jesus crucified. And that is the resurrection of Jesus, because that resurrection is what dealt the death blow, the crushing of Satan's head.
Amen.
Okay? And so, I think, my take on this is that this wound, this head that was wounded, had a fatal wound, was that. Okay, but yet it was healed. Did Satan give up? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He continued to use the Jewish authorities to attack Christianity. You go back and you read through, what was Paul, you know, Paul was continually fighting against Jews, not just Jews, but oftentimes Jewish Christians, who wanted to impose the Jewish law on Christians, you say, in order for Gentiles to be accepted into the church. And Paul was continually fighting that battle. Much of what Paul wrote in the New Testament has to do with that battle. Okay? And of course, as time went on, the Roman government at that time became, you know, very much involved in the persecution and the stopping of Christianity. Now, they had a different reason for doing so. The Jews wanted to stop Christianity. Why?
So they wouldn't lose power.
So they wouldn't lose power, but also because, hey, this whole Jesus thing, that was not the Messiah. Okay? And this is heresy. We need to stop this stuff. Alright? But the Romans, why did they want to stop Christianity? Exactly.
Oh, okay.
It's about power. Okay? But, you know, the emperor was who? What was the emperor considered to be?
God.
God. And now these Christians are coming along and talking about worshiping no other God. And so that's a threat to Roman power. So they were all too pleased to join in and try to stop this spread of Christianity. Okay. My take on it is that I think that perhaps relates to that head, one of the many governments, okay, that had a prominent role in the beginning of all of this, that had a fatal blow, but yet recovered. That he was able to continue on persecuting Christianity. Any thoughts, ideas, comments, questions on that?
It's kind of an oxymoron. When you think of something fatal, something comes back.
Like Jesus on the cross?
No, I'm thinking of this.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I think when you look at it spiritually, is that not the same kind of thing? Jesus was dead. He died on the cross, physically.
Right.
Okay, but yet he rose again. He came back.
But to a person that's not spiritual,
they don't come back. Right, but Satan is spiritual. That's my point in this, is that, we're talking about two spiritual powers here that are at war with one another. And so that also is a good thing you brought this up, because that also ought to tell us and give us a good indication of the power that Satan has. Okay? He is a force, a spiritual force to be reckoned with. He is not, the little devil in the red suit with the horns and the pointy tail that, people like to characterize him. What's that? Caricature is the word I was thinking of. This little cartoon figure. That's not who Satan is. It's not who he is. You need to understand how powerful he really is. Okay? You need to know that.
I was going to say, you have to remember Satan is spiritual, and he's going to have his reign or his time until God's going to deal with all sin.
Yep.
And
that's part of what this whole thing is really all about. Again, keep in mind, John's vision is to bring encouragement to us. What's the thing? Things are bad. But in the end, the victory is assured. That's what we have to keep in mind, right?
So it's also that we are not able to destroy Satan. Maybe we can beat Satan on a certain battle, we can take him back. So we need to be prepared
all the time.
A lot of times we get discouraged because he has this, but we're told that.
Yeah.
So we need to be prepared for this.
Right. Well, again, keep in mind, we mentioned this, we were talking about Jesus in the last section, Satan tempted him, we saw that, but it also tells us that Satan left him for a season. So he came back again and again trying to tempt Jesus, to try to stop him from accomplishing what he set out to do. And so if Satan did that with him, why should we think that he's not going to do that with us? He's going to continue. And the stronger you get, by the way, the worse his temptation is going to be. He's going to keep on attacking. Okay? So, again, part of this is for us to be aware of that. Now, this beast was given this power, great authority, to make war against the saints and to conquer them. And he was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. This is in the next section here from verse 5 on down. Let me get somebody to go ahead and read that from 5 down to verse 10. All right, Judy, go ahead, please.
And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and fast things. And power was given unto him to continue 40 and 2 months. And he opened his mouth and blasphemed things against God, blasphemed his name, and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose name are not written in the book of life, the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. Any man having ear, let him hear. He that keepeth in captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword.
Okay, so here's part of that warning of what's getting ready to happen. What's happening to them? What's what's happening to us even today. Okay, this beast is blaspheming God. Now we see this again, just a different form here. He has this authority for how long? 42 months, and it's the same number if you go back and look at the other ones we looked at, whether you count it in days or months or times, time and half time, it all comes out the same. One of the things we said about that is most likely represents what? What? A specific period of time. Okay? Not again, not to be taken literal, that you've got to count out the months or the days or what have you, but a specific period of time that God is allowing this to take place. Okay? That in and of itself, as we said before, should give us some encouragement to know that God is in control. God, Satan cannot do anything that God does not permit him to do. Okay? And including how long he's able to do the things he's going to do. God has placed that restriction upon him. So it is a limited amount of time. He is blaspheming God and making war against us. Okay? Making war against us. Making war against the saints, not only trying to make war against, he's blaspheming also those who already are with God. Okay? Look at what he says here. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, except who? Okay, except those whose names are written in the book of life, the Lamb's book of life. Okay? Who's that talking about? Williams. Okay? Williams. Usins. Okay? Those who belong to the Lamb, he says here. Okay? And then there is this warning. Whoever has an ear, let him hear. In other words, pay attention to this. This kind of vision, these statements should get our attention, is what he's really saying here. Okay? Because you don't want to be outside of the Lamb's book of life. Right? There are some of those saints who are going to be taken into captivity. There are some who are going to be killed with the sword. Those things happen? Absolutely. But what does he say here? This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of the saints. In other words, as you see your fellow believers, your fellow Christians being persecuted, don't lose heart. Don't give up. But that is indeed going to happen to some. And we need to understand that. Part of the reason for those things happening is for Satan to discourage people and to get them to stop following Christ. So, you know, it's kind of that, you know, if I'm going to, you know, if you don't stop believing in Jesus, I'm going to kill you. Okay? Well, you know, I've lost my family. They were all killed. I don't want to die. So I deny Jesus. Okay? And so here is a, you know, a warning about that. You need to understand that some are going to die. Some are going, they're going to face persecution.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Not just ISIS. There are governments around the world. We mentioned North Korea, you know, last time. North Korea, you know, Christianity is a period. It is against the law. And you can be killed for just possessing the Bible. You suppose that might be represented by one of those heads on that beast?
Yeah.
Didn't
that happen here too? Where you see the men go in and the church and start shooting, and like the lady that was in the bank, and the man come in and wanted her to
Well, and certainly those things are happening, you know, I think that's part of the fallout of the government.
Well, I think the government said we're starting to see the beginning of what these other countries have.
Well, we're starting to see more and more of the effect of Satan on not just governments, but individual people that are, you know, working on his behalf. The bottom line of it is that Christians have been and will continue to be persecuted. All right? And it's going to, you know, we in America don't really, I don't think we really appreciate that a whole lot for what it is, because, you know, for in some places around the world, it's been forever. Christianity has been persecuted. And it's been an ongoing thing, reality for places, especially in the Muslim world. Okay? But here in America, it's happening more and more and more. And the reason for that primarily is because Christianity is an opposite of what the world is wanting to do. And people are opposed more and more to Christianity because of what we stand for. And that's not the way the world wants to go. And then you have to understand, that's Satan. Okay? Satan uses whatever is at his, you know, and his ability to use people, individuals, doesn't matter. Even churches, and that's what we're going to look at next. Let me get somebody to read, if you would, beginning in verse 11. And let's go down to, let's just go down to the end of the chapter. And then we'll talk about all of this part of it. Who's got that? Judy? Okay.
Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf. And made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. And it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. Because of the signs, it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast. It deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. Second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be healed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Of the person who has insight to calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666.
Okay, so we have a second beast, okay, that comes up out of the ground, and this beast, how is it described? Looks like a lamb. With what? Two horns. Okay. And this lamb is able to deceive a lot of folks, right? Says he's exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, the one whose fatal wound had been healed. So, you know, that one we said represents what? The first beast? The power, the governments, and so forth, okay? What does this beast represent?
The same government?
What? False religion. The apostate church. Okay? And again, you see the connection with this is what we saw earlier when John had the vision of the temple and he was told to measure the temple. So I keep coming back to this so you understand the significance of that. Okay? Remember, he was told to measure what? Within, you know, what was these two things he told to measure? The altar, but what else? The inner courts, okay? And he was specifically told not to measure what? The outer court, okay? What's the symbolism of that we saw? The inner court represents the true church. The outer court represents those who look like the true church, but they're not the true church. Okay? Apostate Christianity. They really understand what that word means, apostate, in other words, falling away. Those who have fallen away from the truth. All right, that's what it means. So this lamb then represents false religion. For the earlier folks, okay, in the first century, what would they have been looking at in terms of false religion? Okay, agnostics was certainly a major part of early Christianity, or what was said to be Christianity. What else? Okay, Nicolaitans, all those we talked about earlier, right? Okay, and the beginning early on, okay, of just the general falling away that Paul warned Timothy would happen, right? Okay. Remember what he said, the time would come when men will, what? Not put up with sound doctrine. And so, early in the second century, we saw this party, this falling away from the scriptures. Okay? So, it was already happening then. So, they dealt with it, the apostate church. And are we dealing with it today? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, again, we go back to the Roman church. All right? Where does all of that fit in? The Roman Catholic Church. Go back to your, you know, the sheet that I gave you, and it has all the denominationalism and all of that in the history. Remember we said, if you go back and you look in the history books and you look up Christianity, it's going to follow the history of the Roman Catholic Church, okay? It's less concerned about the truth of what the Bible teaches than it is about the general grouping of what is referred to as Christianity. So that's the history that it follows.
So that's false from the history.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a breaking away, an apostasy from the truth of the scriptures. Again, what Paul had warned was going to take place. It didn't take long for that to begin to take place. Okay. Again, you know, we can see a lot of these things that happened that I think we look at the Roman Catholic Church and the way that it went, we say, yeah, that's definitely a part of it. I don't have a problem with that at all. But what I do have a problem with is those who would say, that's what it's talking about, period. Okay? And it looked at that. Because as we talked about earlier, you know, when we, again, go back to that sheet, that handout that I gave you, you look at the Protestant Reformation, you know, it's real easy to beat up on the Catholics and say, well, you know, they apostatized, but what about all these denominations that we have? Why does it not equally apply to them? They're not following what the truth of the scriptures are either. So we have to be real careful, you know, in that. Now, there is a certain connection in all of these things to the Roman government and the connection to the Roman Catholic Church. That basically, you know, historically what you see happening is the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, okay, in terms of its power over the world, but as it was declining, what was gaining in power? The Roman Catholic Church. And so basically, in history, as you go back, you can see that Rome was the church. Okay? That transition of power from the emperors to the leaders of the Catholic Church, primarily the Pope and, you know, and so forth, that there was that, in a sense, transition of power. So the power of Rome in that regard continued on. And certain power, certain amount of it continues even to today. Alright, still a force to be reckoned with. Okay? So certainly they are a part of this picture, but they are not the entirety of the picture, is what my suggestion is about that.
Well, when it breaks away, it goes breaks away, like the Methodists and Baptists and all. They break away, but it's not, they don't go totally by the Bible.
Right.
They still have their own tradition.
Right.
Into that, so when they, it's like, yeah, there is a breakaway, but they're only changing right. What they feel they want to change.
Right. So therefore, they're like the lamb. They look like they're part
right.
of the church, okay? But they're deceiving a lot of people with false teachings.
Yes, a lot of it.
You see? And so a lot of people, as it describes here, are being led astray by those false teachings that people are given. Alright, so again, we've got to be aware of, you know, the inclusion of all of that. Anything that departs from what the truth of the scriptures teaches is apostasy, period. Okay? And certainly would apply in this situation. Now, you know, we have that going on today. You know, with all kinds of teachings that people have out there. I saw a news article this morning on the morning news. They were talking about the election down in Alabama, and, you know, I'm not bringing this up one way or another for them or getting, you know, the whole controversy with Roy Moore. And basically what they were focusing on was you got ministers that are talking on behalf of Roy Moore, and you have ministers that are talking and supporting you know, his opponent. Now, the interesting thing to me was, and they didn't really show in the videos, they just talked about in the video that I saw, they had Roy Moore's wife at a podium talking and all yeah. kinds of people, I don't know who the world they were. But and on the other side, the supporters of the other person, the other candidate opposed to him, was in a church setting, and they had all these ministers. And the primary ones that they had up there talking were all women. Okay? They're all women. Apostasy or not?
Apostasy.
But see, that's part of what's going on that's very prevalent today. That's happening in churches all over. That you have women who are leading those churches.
Well,
and I seem to recall something that God said in His Word about that not supposed to be happening. Anybody else recall that?
Yes.
I just want to make sure I was, you know, kind of thinking that something.
Excuse me a second.
Okay, we're almost out of time here. We're going to have to probably pick this up next time. But the next thing that he talks about here, we can do real quickly, is talking about this beast and the mark of the beast. Okay? I want you to look at that some more. And we'll begin talking about that next week. There's a couple of things we need to understand about what that is really all about. Okay? Why this particular mark is 666 and so forth. So I only got 20 seconds left. I'm not going to hold Joe like we did last time. Mark. So we'll go ahead and stop here, and we'll pick up with that next time. And we'll go into chapter 14. Actually, it won't be next week. I'm sorry. We'll be the week after next, okay? Because I got some spoiling I got to do. All right, we're going down 7 hours into Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, to go to South Carolina. Jerry is going to be teaching Bible class next Sunday morning. All right? So what I suggest that you do is between now and next Sunday, study Revelation and make a list of all the tough questions that you have on Revelation so you can ask him. All right, thank you all very much.
Thank you.